Radio Influence. The future is now.
You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head.
Don't believe me, just watch.
This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
Hey, it's me. It's the Babe Cats. That's what we're doing. And I have to tell you, there are many, many things we should talk about. And I have to tell you, I'm going to speak. And now for English-speaking friends. What the fuck was she talking about there? We're going to talk to Jeff Crichel, who's a pretty good guy. He's on Radio Influence, so you get to hear him all the time. But he happens to be the host and the founder of the Crush Performance Radio Show. And you can hear him at TSN, which is 1260 in Edmonton. So good. Go listen to him up there. But you can always hear him here at Radio Influence. But, you know, I found him very busy because he's a strength and conditioning coach for Major League Baseball. And the first thing I want to know is, how do I get testosterone? And the first thing he said is, you can't. You know, how long have I been doing this? For 20 years, I've been trying, and nobody will give me anything. I'm just so completely over it. I have to tell you, we're going to have to talk to him because he is very busy. I just sit back and he's got a million things to talk about. We talked about what it does for strength conditioning. We talked about concussions. We talked to him about everything. Let's go talk to him. He's pretty good. Jeff, get over here. I got to talk to you right now. It's the Babe Cast. All right, let me go talk to Jeff right now. He happens to be the consultant for MLB Baseball. And, you know, when I said that, I said, do you get people in trouble or what do? Because you're involved with the strength and conditioning. And I thought to myself, is this mostly minor leaguers or major leaguers both when you do it?
Yeah, well, I was formerly the strength coach for the Toronto Blue Jays. And when I stepped down mm-hmm. from the Blue Jays, I got involved with the international game development side of Major League Baseball, developing players and programs in Europe and Africa. That was 10 years ago. And I'm telling you right now, it has been an absolute honor to see how that program's come around, seeing kids go to college, sign pro, and we've had players make it to the big league. So it's been a great ride.
You know, it seems to me that one of the things that you do in strength and conditioning, and we'll talk more about that, is that when I thought about it, I guess you tell people what they can and cannot take. Like if I got a big blown up nose and allergies, I would take a Benadryl. But I'm thinking to myself, is that something you can do anymore if you're in major leagues?
Well, you know, the great thing about Major League Baseball is, again, they've been very proactive. And maybe it's by force and, you know, there's many different opinions out there, but they now have the strongest drug testing program in all professional sports. And, you know, if we look at what's happened recently with the Colabello suspension, 80-game suspension with the Blue right. Jays, I think this is a good indicator of how strong the program is. I mean, there's many strategies for still beating the system, but, you know, the fact that Major League Baseball has been so aggressive in trying to nail guys who decide to go to the dark side sends a great message across the sporting landscape, even outside of baseball. So it's a real good message to send, and you got to be pretty proud if you're around Major League Baseball of the program they put together.
Well, you've been there, you've been with the Blue Jays, and you know that. So let's talk about Colabello. He's 80 games, he's gone, first baseman. What does that do now? Because you're the former trainer there, so do you feel like he wasn't doing what you were telling him to do, or he was doing something on the side, so who can tell?
Yeah, and again, it's hard to tell, right? Because he's pleading innocence here. And, you know, if you look at the drug that he got busted with, a Tyrannobol, I mean, this is an ancient drug. They haven't made this since the 1990s. So there's some clouds of suspicion over this whole scenario for a number of reasons. One, this drug's not even made anymore. So, you know, if we look at the idea that, hey, he might have been taking something that was contaminated, like a regular supplement, that's a stretch because this steroid isn't even in use anymore. And then if he was cheating, you got to be crazy to use this drug because it's like a Dianabol. It's an anabolic steroid that can stay in your system 3 weeks, maybe even 6 weeks, depending on how you use it. So to use it in this landscape where there's so much testing and they're so aggressive with the doping policies is insanity in itself. So, again, this is a really interesting one. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know Chris at all. I haven't worked with him, but I do want to know what's going on here because if it somehow got into his system without him knowing, that's really concerning. And then if he, you know, for whatever, again, I always, you know, benefit of the doubt. If for some reason he did wind up going to the dark side, hey man, listen, you got to own this now because right now he's guilty, unfortunately, until proven innocent in this world.
You know, one of the things, it's Tyrannobol, is that what it was? And that's something that we used a long time ago. But I'm thinking to myself, why would you get it now? Did they slide it into something in a, you know, in a performance thing? I mean, how would you do that? Is it something that you took or something protein that you used?
Well, you know, there's a strong, listen, athletes beware. And you're right. We're very proactive on providing our athletes with instruction and guidance on the supplement world, because the supplement world is one of the darkest industries on the planet right now. It's a $30-40 billion industry. It's incredibly unregulated. As a matter of fact, if you look at the U.S. FDA, okay, there's over 100,000 products on the market right now, well over 100,000. You know, they're making $30-40 billion a year. The FDA only does about 1,000 random tests per year. But listen to this. In 2013, the FDA had charged 123 companies for selling right around 460 spike products. So in this minute testing that the FDA does, they've raked in a huge haul of policy breakers. And this is over-the-counter stuff that you and I would go down to the vitamin shop or the local health food shop to get over the counter. These companies are deliberately spiking their products so the consumer gets results. Unfortunately, there's a dark and dangerous side to that as well.
Here's the question. I'm going to go a different direction, but I have to do this. I always said, can I take testosterone? Can I do any of this? And people said, well, yeah, if you want to grow muscles. But I'm thinking to myself, can I do any of these? And can I mean, I understand you can go to a doctor and they can give it to you and all that. But how does it change me? Because I always want to do it, but no one will let me do it. You know?
So yeah.
I never get to do that. What happens to me? I mean, I'm obviously not a 28-year-old athlete, but what happens to me, or do I just fall down and what happens? I don't know.
Well, first of all, that's a tricky question, because there's so many different ways this can impact the human being. A lot of it has to do with the type of stress you put on the body. Most of this stuff, I mean, if you look at what Corabello got caught with, and earlier in the month, Daniel Stump from the Phillies got busted for the same drug. Frank Mir from the UFC is under investigation for using the same drug. This is a recovery drug, right? So this isn't like a mass builder. The way these guys would use it would be for recovery. So, you know, all these drugs, they do different things, and depending on what the athlete or the person is doing, they're going to act different ways in the human body. But here's the crazy thing, and this is what a lot of people don't think about. You know, if you take something like a growth hormone or a testosterone, for example, you've got to understand that if you're not screened properly, it acts on every process in the body, including disease states, including, you know, things that are, and everything that goes well. So you've got to be careful, and, you know, it's not something to play around with outside of the guidance of somebody who knows what they're doing, preferably a doctor.
You know, one of the things, let me just say, I'm sitting here in 2016. I couldn't care less what they did in 2003. You know, we were all worried about A-Rod and everything, and A-Rod obviously was the guy that everybody talks about. But if I sit here now, I couldn't care less what they take anymore.
Yeah.
And we were all so involved in it some 10 plus years ago, but now it's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that's right, but it's kind of what we think now.
No, you're right. We've almost become, hey, it's just part of the game now, which is very, very sad, you know. But if you look at what's happening here, there's an interesting spin going on, this Colabello thing, and it's really stirred up a lot of interest again. And again, any publicity is good publicity. This isn't necessarily great for baseball, but on the other side, we're raising awareness again. If we talk about the right things for kids who are coming up, because we know why athletes go to the dark side, sports babe. I'm telling you right now, they go to the dark side for only three particular reasons. One, they don't know what else to do. Two, they're slipping and falling apart, and they see their career, fading away. Or three, they just don't think they quite have the talent at the time to break through and get to where they want to go, to the promised land, so to speak. And that's not necessarily the case. You just have to know what to do. So, you know, one of the big things here is the real lack of education for these guys in terms of options and what they can do to get results. You're right, we don't really care anymore because it's part of the game. But the interesting thing that's going on now is if you peruse the news articles on this whole drug issue that's going on, especially in Major League Baseball, you'll see guys like Matt Halliday and Scherzer, Verlander, even Jose Bautista coming out and speaking very, very strongly about they want to see their drug policy and their drug program even stronger. They want to get rid of doping in the game. So that's a real good message from some of the sports biggest names.
Yeah, and but I still wonder, and we'll get off it, but I mean, like, I still think there will be people that get away with it. And I wonder, I think maybe, I don't know, but when somebody gets caught, you think, well, didn't somebody tell you how to do that? Is that what happens? Like, if Chris Colabella gets caught, and let's just talk any athlete, do you say to him, did you not start this or stop doing this a month ago? I mean, is it something that I think, or what happens there?
Well, if you look at what happened in the Victor Conte, the old Balco scandal, right? You know, if you listen to Conte talk, he would say right now, you should never get caught. If you know what you're doing and you're smart, mm-hmm. you'll never get caught. And if you look at how they managed those 15 athletes and A-Rod in particular, it was little microdoses. It was testosterone patches, testosterone cream that would peak at like 1 in the morning. You'd be back down to normal blood ratios by 4. And by the time you showed up to the park the next day, you're normal. Whether you test it or not, you're mm-hmm. not going to test positive. Mm-hmm. So these microdosing strategies have really caught on. And plus, not only that, the designer drugs, and we all know that, you know, for all the good that the World Anti-Doping Agency and all these drug policies and programs do, the dark side and the other side, the makers of these, you know, synthetic and custom drugs, they're so far ahead of the testing, they're using stuff they can't even test for right now. So there's a lot of, you know, it's a much bigger issue, I think, in a lot of ways.
You know, one of the things, let's talk to concussion, because I saw the movie and I tried to see a lot of it. I don't know if they really kept it under... In some degree, I guess you could say that the NFL really kept that away and people didn't really see it as much. But I'm wondering now I guess in Major League Baseball, but more in the NFL, what are people doing there? I mean, you see kids that get, you know, the first thing they do is they pull them out and make sure that they're all right. And it used to be, it wasn't that long ago, and I would say more than 10 years ago, oh, his bell got rung. You know, and that's the way we would see it and put them right back out there. And now when they come out, they want to make sure that everything's all right. But I wonder how much of that is the NFL act versus what's really going on.
Yeah, I know. That's a good point, too. No, I think they're very serious. And I think, you know what, it's interesting, but liability and lawsuits are driving policy now. And I think we see that with this massive mm-hmm. settlement. I mean, this $1 billion settlement, concussion settlement in the NFL. I mean, listen, this is the biggest legal settlement in the courts outside of the big tobacco settlements years ago. So this is a pretty substantial ruling by the court. And I think this is one of the things that's going to drive policy moving forward. I do believe the NFL is now legitimately getting involved, and they're doing a very good job in terms of financing research and looking at programs and ways to improve player safety, you know, and that is trickling again down to the little leagues. And so we're seeing, you know, hit count programs pop up. We're looking at even the NFL teams altering the rules for practice and the amount of contact they mm-hmm. have in practice, which is all really, really important stuff moving forward. Listen, all this concussion stuff, you're right, in the past, we don't know where this happened. Did all this stuff happen when these guys were little kids banging their heads together, which is a very, very serious and legitimate conversation? Or is it because of a couple of massive contacts with these big giants in the NFL? It's probably a combination of all this stuff, and I think it has to be addressed from the top to bottom. But you're right. The one thing and the good thing that's come out of this, I think, you know, if we look at the big picture, is one, we have more awareness. So we have, mm-hmm. you know, way more it looks like we have more concussions now, but it's probably more due to our awareness of the signs and symptoms of concussion than it is the actual number.
Jeff, did you see, it was on the news a few weeks ago, and the Little Leaguers were playing, and then two adults got into it at the third base. Did you see that? Two adults got into it, and the kids were just watching them, and they kind of just backed away. Nobody was getting excited, and somebody went over there. These two guys got into it, and some guy came out of the stands or whatever it was, and they started beating the crap out of each other. And the kids just sort of stood there and watched it, like how stupid it was.
Yeah, I know. I did see it. And, you know, again, another issue in sports, and this has happened forever. We've seen parents banned from ballparks, banned from football fields, certainly banned from hockey rinks. All you have to do is YouTube crazy sport parent, and you'll see scraps and fighting and swearing and the kids standing on looking like, oh, for crying out loud, right? What's going on here? So, yeah, and that's another issue that we're unfortunately dealing with in sport at all levels.
You know, one of the things that I was wondering about is that we were talking about the strength and conditioning, and you essentially, you'll say to a Major League Baseball, this is what you can take. this is not what you can take. Is that what you do to major leaguers? Is that what you say to them?
Right. Well, listen, Major League Baseball, the NCAA, NFL, the PGA, you know, all these mm-hmm. organizations now are coming out with lists of acceptable supplements that they could take. And there's an actual list. So Major League Baseball now has a very strict list of products that have been approved for use by the players. Now, the players don't have to just use those products, but anything outside of those products, you're on your own. So as a strength coach inside the game right now, we can only recommend the products that are on that list. Anything outside of that list, we're playing with fire. With our careers, there's fines, there's dismissals, you know, in terms of staff and support staff now. So it's very, very regulated. And I think, again, that's a pretty good move. The problem is the system is still got some flaws in it, but at least it's a step forward in protecting athletes from contaminated supplements.
You know, one of those things, it seems to me that if you gave it to me, I would say to myself, I'm only doing what's on this list. I don't want to see the other drugs. I just want to see what you give me. That's what I'll do.
Yeah, and that's the way it has to go, unfortunately. You know, in terms of the drugs and stuff, I mean, that all goes to the medical side and the doctors. We're talking, you know, from our side, just the supplementation and the daily 24-hour nutrition. So, you know, there was a great study done in 2001. The IOC, you know, was really troubled by all of these great sport ambassadors from all over the world, these great Olympic athletes from all these nations testing positive and everybody pleading innocence as you think they would, right? Unfortunately, some of these athletes, the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, knew very well. And the fact that, you know, they would go against their character and cheat really, really started to make them think about maybe there's something going on. So what they did in 2001 is they went out to the marketplace from 13 different countries, just went down to local vitamin shops and health shops and bought 200 or 634 of the most popular supplements. And after they tested them, 15% of all the supplements they tested had ingredients that weren't on the label that would cause these athletes to test positive. And that is just a really good warning for all the listeners who are involved in sports or parents of athletes. Mm-hmm. You've got to be really careful what you put in your body, especially if you're looking at a college career or a national team, or if you're in any type of organization that does testing.
Well, I mean, you're going to be that, but anybody else that plays baseball and isn't on a national team or anything like that, they can do whatever they want to, but it's kind of stupid at this point, isn't it? I mean, like, if you're all jazzed up and you're, you know, looking great with your abs and all that, we're like, well, he's doing steroids. You're ridiculous. Are you going to come out here and play baseball or what?
Yeah, right. Well, there's guys that do it for sure. And we also know, you know, in the general public, the biggest users are the guys that are more concerned with body image than anything else, right? They're not even worried about performance. They're worried about, hey, man, I'm starting to go south of the border here, you know? So we've got to do something. And so from the you know, body image side, that's probably the biggest user in the general public. But understand this, you know, some of these supplements are spiked with anabolic steroids. There's been deaths associated with some of this stuff, certain illnesses as well. So, you know, again, it's an uphill battle for the FDA and the regulatory organizations, but it's something that consumers do need to be aware of for sure.
You know, one of the things that I was thinking about was about match fixing, and it seems that that's soccer, but I guess there are other things that we can talk about, but I think of it as soccer, and it seems like it's going on because it was a thing where the Italians were involved and the Russians were involved and all this kind of stuff. But are they still really doing that a lot in soccer now?
No, I think people would be unpleasantly surprised at how common it really is. There's a great book by author Declan Hill. It's called The Fix. Now, Declan Hill is an investigative reporter and author, and he went behind the scenes. He actually talked and met with some of the mafia guys in Russia that actually do the match fixing, and it's blood-curdling stories. It's a fantastic read, but it's incredibly real, and it goes right to the height of the game, right to the highest levels of the game. And he also talks about some of his investigations pointing to match fixing and betting on minor league soccer. Like, we're talking 11- and 12-year-olds. There was a 12-year-old championship, I think in Poland it was. There was over $3 million bet on that game, and most of the bets weren't on winning or losing. It was on when the goal was scored or how many penalties there would be. It's all crazy. But, yeah, it goes to every level of the game, and it's not just confined to soccer, unfortunately, either. You know, we hear the stories in tennis right now. You know, we've seen what happened in basketball a few years back. So, you know, anytime there's big money involved, you're always exposed to this type of stuff, and unfortunately, it's all too real.
And you know, when it happens, like I hear about it in tennis and I go, I never thought of that. And it's like, well, maybe because I don't gamble that much. But I just, it's the same thing when you see the soccer team. It reminds me of basketball. In basketball, you can get somebody to, you know, screw up a game by banging into the glass and not hitting the shots. But I see the same thing sometimes. And it's interesting when you said these 12 and 13 year olds, because I'm thinking to myself, all right, you're there. You could hit it, but just kick it off to the side. I mean, how do you really talk to 12 year olds about doing that? How do you do that?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I mean, yeah. I can understand if you get somebody that's 25 and they're doing it, but how do you talk to somebody who's 13 years old and go, you're not going to do this?
Yeah, you know, and it could, you know, I can't really comment on that, but I'm sure, you know, where there's money involved, there's ways, and these guys are ruthless. Some of the tactics and approaches they take, especially maybe it's not even the kids, maybe it's more the officials of the game, right? You know, maybe it's the coaches of the game, maybe it's the administrators, you know, we don't really know, but we know what's happening. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of angles, and then where there's an angle, it's going to happen, and that's the thing. So again, it's just sort of, you know, be aware of the situation, but it's happening out there. That's the crazy thing.
Well, and you know, Jeff, one of the things when I look at it, I think to myself, well, all right, so I can see it in soccer, and maybe it's going to happen in tennis. I never expected that. And, you know, we're more involved in football than anything, and everything is about betting in Vegas, but everybody bets on it. I mean, we have the red zone to just watch TV all the time, and it tells you all day who's doing what underneath. Everybody knows that everyone's betting, I guess.
Yeah, oh, no, there's no question. And I can't remember the numbers, you know, we look at the legal betting, that's one number, but the big numbers are the non-legal betting. That's where the big money really is, you know, the stuff that we don't even know about. So, you know, does match fixing or does game fixing get into the NFL? Well, you know, I don't think there's been a lot of evidence of it, but you know what? It's unfortunate, kind of like the drug use in sports. Every time, you know, we see a guy do really well, he gets suspicious just automatically now. Hey, that guy's probably using, right? Well, it's the same thing now. When I see a play from a professional player that's just subpar or doesn't look quite right, I can't help but think, I wonder if that guy's on the take or I wonder if there's a fix going on, because that just shouldn't happen at that level of the game. So whether it's true or not, I hate to say, but you know, just the fact that the suspicion is there, it makes it crazy to me.
You know, one of the things, Jeff, is that you've been with the Major League Baseball and international and doing that, and you've been doing a bunch of things there. If you go in, let's say, to a major league club, whether they're minor or major league, do you sit there and say, this is what we need? And you sit there in the back of the class, it's kind of like where I would be. I'd be going, I'm not paying any attention because I'm doing my own stuff. And I'm not. Do you see that, or do people act like everything is interesting? Do you know, in other words, are people sitting in the back going, I'm not paying any attention to him anyway because I'm doing my own thing?
You're talking about when we're addressing the players? No. You know, it rarely works like that. You know, in professional sports, you know, the number one objective, you know, from our perspective, is to help the player get as far as they can possibly go. And yeah, we'll sit down and talk to the group once in a while, and they're just a bunch of guys, right? So they'll sit there and yeah, you know, we keep it short, we keep it engaging, but the real power is in the individual approach for these players. You know, you have 25 guys in every roster, you got a strength coach at every single level. The strength coaches are now mandated with, you know, pursuing each player's best interest, along with the coaching staff, the hitting coach, infield coach, the pitching coach. And so there's a real individual approach, and that's the way to go right now. So, you know, guys are terribly engaged. You do get a feel, though, for the guys who have a real strong interest in getting better and the guys who are just there to maybe just, you know, see what happens. Some guys are very proactive. Some guys are kind of laissez-faire, laid back. But either way, you can still tap into some serious potential there. So no, the players, for me anyway, have been incredibly engaged, and it's been rewarding to see, you know, when they do get into the program or follow the protocols, we get results, guaranteed. There's going to be guaranteed results if you know what you're doing.
You know, I'm just thinking, there you are, Major League Baseball. There are people that come in there who have been the best player ever in their high school, and all of a sudden they're there, or even in their college, and they get into the minor leagues. And I wonder if you get there, if, you know, it's hard. If you go somewhere and you're pretty damn good, and then you get in there and you realize that there's seven other players that are 10 times better than you are, how much is that for somebody that gets in there and thinks, well, I'm really good and I was the baseball athlete in Florida or in Texas or something like that, and then I get in there and there's like nine people that are 10 times better than you are?
Yeah, exactly. And that's a real important one, because I'll tell you right now, When guys start going to the next level, they realize that it's a much bigger world out there. So the higher you go, mm-hmm. the more you realize that, you know, there's players that are as good or better. And that's the interesting thing. And, you know, we see all these. Here's a really interesting stat, something for every coach and parent and athlete to be aware of. You know, you have these young phenom players, you know, through, you know, 13, 14, they might be the best in their town or the best in their high school. But if you look at the end result, if you look at pro athletes and Olympic athletes, it's interesting. The numbers come in around 66% of the world's top athletes were late developers. These are athletes that didn't really show any real prowess through those real, you know, high school developmental years, 13, 14, 15, or 16, for high performance sports. So that makes you think, well, what happens to all those kids who are just standout, real phenomenal players at that age? You know, they get eventually washed away. 66% mm-hmm. of the time, the top athletes were late developers. So what happens to the kids mm-hmm. that were good? Well, you know, maybe they weren't pushed by their coaches, or maybe they weren't ever, you know, coached to the point where they had to learn how to learn. And that's a real important thing. So, you know, as these athletes move up, it's interesting to see how these young, real up-and-coming talents sort of just fade away because they were never addressed properly. And that's something we're really working on right now.
Jeff, let me go back to the concussion thing, if you will, because I saw the movie and we've seen things about it. But what would you do? Would you have a first step that you would use to go out and try and solve the concussion in some way?
Well, listen, there's some great strategies going on, you know, and again, this has to be a holistic approach. I don't think there's any one simple solution. You know, if you look what happened here in the U.S. in November, the U.S. Soccer Federation banned heading up to the age of 11. Researchers wanted it to 12, 13 years of age, but they know that these young brains are way more susceptible to injury than older developed brains, right? If you look what happened in Canada recently for hockey, you know, they're hockey crazy up there, but they banned body checking up to the peewee age, which is, you know, 12, 13 years of age. And both of these movements, you know, for traditionalists, it was met with some really, real strong opposition. Until you start understanding the science of, you know, athlete development, these young brains are incredibly susceptible, more susceptible to injury than an older athlete. There was actually a great research study done, an impact force study done at Virginia Tech, where they took their football team and put the sensors in their helmets, and they monitored thousands and thousands of hits. And some of these impacts, you know, had G-forces that equal car crashes. Well, the interesting mm-hmm. thing about this sports state is they also did that similar study for 8 and 9 year-old Pop Warner players. And guess what they found in those 8 and 9-year-olds? They found impact forces that were exactly the same as they found in the college players. And now, we all know what those little Pop Warner guys look like. They're like little bobbleheads. Those brains are, you know, these giant heads and these little bodies, these vulnerable brains, and they're dealing with impact forces that are the same as college players. So, you know, all these hit count programs, the safe soccer program, the ban on body checking are all real important moves forward, you know, at the grassroots level. And at the same time, just raising awareness about, hey, what is a concussion? What are the symptoms? How do you deal with it? Most concussions, just so you know, if it's handled properly, you're back in action in 7 to 10 days. And that's where a lot of people don't really know that.
Did I not tell you that Jeff was really good? You should catch him all the time. Jeff Crischel is his name, and he's very good. You can catch him on Radio Influence whenever you want to. I got some things. You know what? I am so sick of this, but I got to do it. So Johnny Manziel's going up for something. They're going to slap him on the wrist, and that's going to be it. Nothing's going to happen to him. You know, all of a sudden, his father is out saying, if you don't take care of him, if something doesn't happen, he's going to die by the time he's 24. Well, not for nothing, you asshole, but you're the dickhead that let him act like an asshole since he was 12 years old, and now he's being a dick? I'm sorry. Where were you the whole time? Why didn't somebody put him in an arm lock and noogie him big time and straighten him out? So I don't want to hear anything from their family at all. I've had enough of that. That's going to be it. Now, I have to tell you something. Since we were talking a lot with Jeff just now, I thought, was it Brandi Chastain who said, I'm going to give myself, my brain is going to go to BU, and they can find all of that. And I said, well, that's a really good thing. And I said, well, that's a good thing. So I've decided that I'm going to give my brain to BU. But they said, no. I'm the fabulous sports babe.
If you know the babe at all, you'll know the show never ends.
Don't believe me, just watch.
Follow her on Twitter @RealSportsBabe and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. This has been The Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.